Yes. Wait for Black Caesar.
Blog Talk Radio.
Vinci, where you at?
Oh,
yo, shorty.
Yo, shorty.
Oh, no, I'm coming right back. When I leave, you know I'm coming right back. Do what you do, you know how I like that. When I leave, it's never forever. Before it's all said and done, you better get it together. So when I come back, I hope things get better. Just think back on the times that we treasured. Making love in a tub, all pleasure. The love that I got for you, they couldn't measure. Even if I leave, don't mean that I'm leaving. If I don't make it home, don't mean that I'm cheating. Out on the road doing shows for the weekend. No reason to act like that. So when I leave, I'll be right back.
Right back.
Forget about the lies and rumors. Just to see you wish it could be sooner. Me plus you just equals a little junior.
I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
Said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I promise you I'll never leave. As long as you have me. I said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
Then I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I swear that no matter where I go, I'll be coming right back to you.
When I make it home, you know it's all love, girl. So you know it ain't no reason to bug, girl. Stop tripping. Stop flipping. Whenever we together, my heart starts skipping. Whenever I'm gone, you the one that I'm missing. I got you on my mind all of the time. You know the haters gon' hate and the lies gon' lie. Think about it. They don't wanna see you by my side. Never meant to hurt you. Don't wanna see you cry. Last thing I wanna see is some tears in your eyes. I'll be right back. I know you hear it all the time. If I ain't with you, then I'm out on the grind. Told you. It ain't even like that. Just know when I leave, I'm coming right back. Told you, it ain't even like that. Just know when I leave, I'm coming right
said
back.
I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
Said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I promise you I'll never leave. As long as you have me. I said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
Said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I swear that no matter where I go, I'll be coming right back. No matter where I go, you'll always be on my mind. G-Swift said it best, I'm just on my grind. You know I'll be there for you. When you're down and don't know what to do, just go ahead and take my hand. I'll pull you up and help you stand. It don't matter what them haters say, just remember that I'm here to stay. Ain't no one tear me away from you. Don't care what they try to do. They're just jealous of what we got. So we'll look at this and laugh. Cause just like I told you, I came right.
I said I'll be right back, baby. Right back.
I said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I promise you I'll never leave. As long as you have me. I said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I swear that no matter where I go, I'll be coming right back.
Right.
Said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
Said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I promise you I'll never leave. As long as you have me.
Oh.
Said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
Said I'll be right back, baby.
Right back.
I swear that no matter where I go, I'll be coming right back to you. Coming right back to you. Oh. No, I'm coming back to you. Oh, back to you. Coming back to you.
Yo, yo, yo. What's everybody out there? How you guys doing tonight? It's going to be a great night. Tonight we got Brother Jason X, my girl Gidget. She's on the phone lines. Hey, guys, you can take it away now. It's your floor. Your time. Go ahead and shine, baby.
Well, how are you, DJ Black Caesar?
I'm doing wonderful, man. I'm doing great. I'm blessed.
Well, allow me to congratulate you on your new radio show, which was awesome last night. For those who may have missed it, they missed a treat, and thank you for letting me shout out to you last night.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We had a great time last night. The show was a success. We had a lot of people in the rooms, guys. We were on top of it last night. Vianna did a great job. Everything was perfect, man. It couldn't have been no better.
Yes, sir. And may I send the greetings to my beloved brother Jason. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, dear queen. It's good to hear your voice, and it's also good to hear from you, brother Black Caesar. Thank you for inviting me once again to the Blog Talk Radio Show. Big, big shout out and love to our Facebook fam from Nation Builders and all those who are listening. Thank you and thank God for us being here tonight.
Thank you,
yes.
Brother Jason.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum, family. That's to my Nation Building family, to my Nation of Islam family, to my Muslim family all over the world. I want to say Hujambu to my Kenyan family. I want to say Kadu to my Nigerian family. Hotep. Hola, and good evening. And thank you once again for joining Nation Building. We're talking tonight about chemical warfare and the re-enslavement of the black race. Brother Jason.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm thankful to God to be here and thankful to hear your voice and to be a part of, once again, what I feel is a very important subject matter. You know, we always have certain things that we bring into our community with love to show them and show ourselves that no matter what anyone says about how we in the Nation of Islam perform and act as members, we are trying our best to make our word our bond in what we said that we were going to do by coming together as a nation to help build and strengthen the community at large. So please pardon my voice, it's a little hoarse. We were out doing God's work this past Monday with the brothers in Muhammad's Mosque number 7. We were involved in a rally as well as a parade that they had up in Mount Vernon area. Of course, this coming Saturday, June 2nd, our beloved minister here at Muhammad's Mosque number 7, Brother Minister Abdul Hafiz Muhammad, is going to speak in another one of the Stop the Killing rallies, and we were in that area promoting the Stop the Killing rally, which will be this Saturday. So I was blessed by Allah's grace to help to drill the brothers, and that's why my voice is sounding a little hoarse this evening.
Oh, okay. That's all right. You sound absolutely great, Brother Jason, and I know you were on point because you are one of those top soldiers from Mosque number 7.
I can only be as our brotherhood is, and that's strong. And I would like to thank all of the brothers who were there. It was just a wonderful event at the parade. The well wishes that we got from the crowd. You know, there were other marching bands, of course. There was the fire department, the police department. They marched and they represented what they believed was a strong symbol of their community. And when the brothers of the mighty FOI, when we marched, when we drilled up the streets of Mount Vernon, believe me, people on the sidelines, they recognized the work that our beloved brothers and sisters have been doing in that community, and it really showed us love. So, again, love to that community, and we'll be back this Saturday, God willing, and we'll be in that community.
Yes, sir, and I know Brother Jason is being very modest, but if I tell you that Brother Jason is one of the top soldiers of Mosque number 7, that's exactly what I mean. He's a former first officer, but he is just a beacon of light, and he is a leader and teacher and guide to many. And I know you don't like to talk about yourself, so I'm going to do it on your behalf.
No, ma'am, sister. And I feel kind of crazy when I hear other people talk about me, so please, let's get on with the subject.
It's one of my brighter lights in the Nation of Islam, and I'm going to leave it at that. Brother Jason, we were talking, and you shared something with me that had occurred in the great state of Texas in which I live, and I was very unaware of, and I wanted to know, would you enlighten our audience tonight about what actually occurred in Tulia, Texas?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Oh, okay, this is a story that dates back a few years, Sister Gizzard. And it's truly a Texas. It's just I would say it's a template for things that go on in our community in general. And in the town of Tulia, Texas, there was one, what they call a police informant. We call them snitches, but this is a paid police informant. And during the height of the crack era in that area in Texas, there was one police informant who was effectively able to garner support from the police department to actually lock up every black member of the community of Tulia, Texas. And they did it because every time the paid informant would snitch on another person in the community, that's how they got paid. And it was really only by the information given, whether it was false or not, that he would get paid. So if you were a neighbor of his, he would make a report, false report. They saw you selling some crack or selling some weed. Police come and pick you up, throw you in jail, and the snitch or informant would get paid. So, of course, it would be in that person's best financial interest to make up whatever story they wanted, and they effectively, as I said, Sister Gidget, locked up every black person in that community. And it was, you know, until it was brought to light in neighboring publications, it was even profiled on the Oprah Winfrey Show and other national broadcasts before it was shut down. But again, as I said, it's endemic of things that are going on in our streets from New York to Los Angeles.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I also read that some of the people who were actually arrested received sentences ranging from 3 to 434 years.
Yes, ma'am.
And that is amazing. And what was even more ironic about that, Brother Jason, is that the sheriff or head officer or whatever he was at that time was also under suspicion of being a thief himself. So, wow, we really have to look out for one another. And that kind of spins off into what we're talking about, chemical warfare, because of a drug, all of this took place. And because of the demand of the drug and the availability of illegal drugs, all of this has taken place. And I kind of wanted to start, off tonight with the studies of Dr. Gabor Maté, and excuse me if I'm not saying his name correctly. Also, that was also some information that I also got from you, Brother Jason, and I found his studies very interesting. He said that from the beginning of childhood, that the children, even in the womb, pick up on the stress of their parents and the discomfort that their parents experience. And as they grow older, they also bear witness to their parents' coping mechanisms and how they actually deal with things. And what ends up happening is that if you have a parent who either use substances while you were in the womb or shortly thereafter or while you're growing up, that begins to be a learned behavior. And that behavior spirals into something else. You know, it spirals in not only to drug addiction, but it also affects the neurobiological development of the brain of the child. And that diagnosis in itself leads to another avenue of chemical dependency. And Brother Jace, I just want to get your opinion about that. I mean, do you agree with that finding?
Oh, yes, ma'am. When I came upon the work of Dr. Gabor Maté, he's a doctor and from up in Canada, and he runs the only clinic in Canada where they allow intravenous drug users to have a safe place to go to, for lack of a better term, to do their thing. There's a clinical setting where if you're an IV drug user, you know, some people in our communities are heroin users, and they use a syringe, they use a needle to inject themselves with heroin. They do not give them the heroin at that clinic, but what they do is they allow them a safe space in which they can inject themselves. And Dr. Gabo Amate runs that clinic, and he said he was able to get that clinic in a time in which Canada had more liberal laws. And he, by means of his research and his studies over the years, was able to convince the government that the drug addict was not the problem. The problem was what causes the person to want to take drugs and become addicted to drugs, what they consider illegal drugs, at all. And it's a framework, Sister Gidget, that was developed as thousands and thousands of years ago in what they call Eastern medicine. And in Eastern medicine, which is different than Western allopathic medicine that we are familiar with here in the United States today and in the Western world, the way that the Easterners think about medicine and medication is they say don't treat the symptoms, remove the cause. And if you remove the cause, there's no need to treat the symptoms. So you can get well in this world by treating symptom after symptom after symptom, and I know we're going to get into that later, Sister Gidget, or you can control the desire for any of the drugs by removing the cause. And that's Dr. Gabo Amate said he set up that clinic in order to remove the cause, which is stress. And, of course, Sister Gidget, I agree with most of his, if not all of his writings. He's got a book called In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, and that was the first time I read him. And in The Realm of Hungry Ghosts, he talks about how the stress levels in utero, the stress levels of the fetus, because we as humans are uniquely born incomplete. We know that, for example, a horse, at the date of a horse being born, a horse can basically be born 1 minute and get up and run in maybe 5 or 10 minutes after it's born. Almost right away, the horse has everything in it it's going to need to be a full and adult horse just from the time it's born. But we as humans, because of the narrow pelvis of our mother and the way that our head has to be birthed, that, of course, we have that soft part that ultimately gets harder when we go through the birth canal, but we're born incomplete, and our head is much greater in size than the rest of our body to be born. So from the time a child is, or a baby is born, it is so much in need of its parents that, for example, if you just take a baby and feed it and don't give it any touch or any love, that baby will die. So there's a biochemical connection between mom and child, and even dad and child, and even dad and mom, that make for that child becoming complete. And I'll give you an example, Sister Gidget, that Dr. Gabo Amate speaks about. He says most of the time in our society of present, and sisters that are on the line and brothers that are on the line, you can bear me witness if you haven't heard this. When a child is crying, an infant is crying, conventional wisdom tells us, and we've heard this, they say, well, don't pick up the baby, because if you pick the baby up every time it cries, then the baby is going to basically train you and you're going to spoil the baby if you keep picking him up every time he cries. But Dr. Gabo Amate says if we are trying to develop a real civilized society, because the baby is incomplete, the baby is crying, and the baby is longing for the touch of its parents, and that's why it cries out, it only can be satisfied by the love and the warmth of its mom or its dad's body every time it cries. So the baby cries out, and you leave it in the crib, or you leave it on the side of the bed. So you're teaching that incomplete baby that you are in a cold world where people don't give a damn about you, instead of giving the right response that every time that child cries out, somebody from its immediate family, somebody from its community is going to give it a loving and a loving touch and be able to secure its needs. That baby, when that baby grows up, it knows that it is a product of its community and its environment, and that when others cry out, that baby who grows up with a loving touch will be more apt to reach out to someone else. So that's just giving a little bit of an example of the way that Gabor Mate's books coincide with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, where we need each other. I will go into more, but that's where I'm at with that, Sister Gidget.
Exactly, and exactly what you're speaking of right now is really that first form of abuse.
It's yes, ma'am.
The most common form of abuse that links the child to abnormal development, because when their environment is in a wobble, so to speak, so is their development. And so parents have to really, really know when to become parents and under what circumstances to become parents, because they are nurturing that child from the womb. And everything that you do when that child is in the womb, that child is biologically and neurobiologically linked to you and linked to everything that you do and your stresses and your reactions and your coping mechanisms, and picks up on it, and it becomes a part of their development, because we all know that the human child's personality is developed by the age of 6. So really, outside of the womb, you if you're not already nurturing and cultivating a child in a very comfortable and loving environment, you're already disrupting that developmental process. But also, he kind of got into what not directly dealing with slavery, but what the United States has actually done economically. And he said that the policies of the economic standards set for the people create an atmosphere of psychological dysfunction.
Yes,
so we're living in a capitalist society, and we don't have capital, we already are made to feel dysfunctional. And we are all categorized in a particular neighborhood or type or class. You know, we're classed in such a way to where we're made to feel dysfunctional, and we are made to feel as though we have to compete. And if we don't get to that next level, you know, we get some inadequacies about ourselves. And all of that stress is passed on to a child. But I wanted to get back to one more point before we get to that. And
yes,
that is the creation, you know, and it's so important. And I wish I had Minister Robin on the phone, because he teaches this much better than I do. But I remember him teaching us about how a man is to properly handle the woman, you know, intimately, I guess.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I don't want to be, I want to be politically correct. And how he is to be catering and affectionate and understanding to her while she is pregnant, and that communication and that bond and that love becomes a part of that child's environment, because even though that baby is on the inside, he's feeling all of that. He feels those vibrations when father raises his voice, or he feels the vibrations when mother cries, you know, and when
yes,
she's sad. And so all of that affects the psyche of the child. And you kind of went a little ahead of me, Brother Jason.
Sorry, Sister Gidget. I'm full. This is a really interesting subject, and you're absolutely right. And Brother Minister Robert is absolutely right. He's touching on, because this is something we can all bear witness to. We are a product of our environment. And many people, you know, they like to say when exactly life begins in the womb. You know, they have these whole debates that are going on with respect to abortion. And they say, well, when is life conceived? And all of that is inconsequential because we have to know that as soon as the spark of life is there, there is an environment created for that life to be. We learn and we have heard and we're taught with inside of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that everything in existence has a beginning and an ending. And so we learn about the beginning of ourselves most oftentimes as stories from our mom. And I would like to go on to say this, and this is an important part of what I've been studying in conjunction with this. And, you know, I study and pull things from various places, and I try to align them in such a way that they make sense to me. It may not make sense to everyone, but it makes sense to me. And I wanted to add this portion to it, Sister Gidget, because you sparked on in the beginning. And in the beginning, the way that a child came into the world was through the agency of more than one woman at the birth canal. They had what is known as a doula or a midwife, and it was in an environment where there were women of like minds and of like spirits that were invited into the home of the woman who was about to give birth. And they made a ceremony for the beginning of this particular sacred life. And this can be found in many, many different cultures throughout civilization, except the culture that we're in right now, where it is a cold environment that is usually, and at one point was only determined how that environment was going to be by men, and men who had really no familiarity with female parts at all. But they took the power of women away from women when they started to disrespect, and in sometimes and in some cases even kill the doulas or the midwives to keep them out of the process of bringing human beings into the world. Why do I say that? Because they want to rob women of their power, the true power of being able to birth the nation. They wanted to put a disconnect or a man's tilt or a man's hand or a masculine identity on the female's power of bringing life from darkness into light. So now, there was a time here, even in the United States, you heard of the Salem witch hunts and the Salem witch trials. Many of the women that were put on trial and murdered in the name of terrorism, in the name of witchcraft, were actually doulas and midwives. And men removed the power of birth from the women in their community. So it put women at a substandard or a disadvantage up until this time. We're talking about in the 20th century where women are starting to invite doulas or midwives back into the birthing process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I said that to say that the power of women has been so disrespected from its inception that men, even myself in doing this research, I had to break down some time to think about how much we have missed being brought into this world through hospitals, through cold, with even unsterile environments, and to the point where even today, statistics say that here in the United States that we're 40th or 50th in infant mortality. Now, we're supposed to be the wealthiest nation and the most sophisticated and most technologically advanced nation on the planet, and we are 40th or 50th on the level of all nations in infant mortality. It's because of this process we're talking about right here, Sister Gidget.
I know, and you know, and people, they really just, I'm not going to say people don't get it, because I believe that we as a people are very intelligent, but we turn a blind eye to a lot of things, and we sit back and we wonder what is going on with our children. But
yes,
if, Caesar?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, what's okay. All right, it's gone now. Okay.
I think I did.
Okay, we're gonna move on to the next point, Brother Jason. I wanted to kind of get back on focus about the re-enslavement, because my point was that when we become so dependent on chemical substance, it takes the power of our own minds over our own bodies, and we become enslaved by chemicals.
Yes,
and every issue we have, every medical issue we have, they have an answer for it. And I just call it put it in a pill. You know, you want long
yes,
hair,
ma'am.
Pill. You know, you want bigger boobs, put it in a pill. You know, you got stress, put it in a pill. You sad, put it in a pill. You know, you angry, put it in a pill. Nobody develops coping skills. Nobody receives counsel. No one receives teachings or guidance or even prayer or meditation is no longer the practice. The practice has become that we now can find the answer to all of our problems by actually putting it in a pill. I want to know what you think about that, Brother Jason.
Yes, ma'am. You're absolutely right, Sister Gidget. And let me say this. You know like I know, this is not something that is just happenstance. This is policy. And I just wanted to read something. And those of us who are listening, I pray that we're not boring. I really pray a lot that the words that we're saying are of interest to you, because this is the whole, in my opinion, ball of wax. Because in this world, they always tell us, oh, if you black people would just become more educated, we could deal with you. If you black people would just do this or just do that, then we could deal with you as equals. But it's not that. We are victims of, I want you to write this down and study it on your own if you get the opportunity from time to time to just open up some of these encyclopedias, and if you can, just do your research on your computer. But if we can, brothers and sisters, study what is known as low-intensity warfare or low-level warfare, and they have in the United States government, this is the way the manual says. Low-intensity conflicts or low-intensity operations. It's a military term for the deployment and the use of troops and or assets in situations other than war. Generally, these operations against state actors are given terms like counterinsurgency, anti-subversion, and peacekeeping. Very innocuous terms. But it says successful LIC operations consist with U.S. interests and laws, can advance U.S. international goals such as the growth of freedom, democratic institutions, and free market economies. Exactly what you're saying, Sister Gidget, that their low-level or low-intensity warfare against our community always generates funds for themselves in the name of peacekeeping, freedom, self-defense, and the free market. So what we think of, that it may be purely what we would just boil down to racism. No, it's low-intensity warfare on our community on a level that we have yet to really fully encompass. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said some things that I wish that we would study, and I don't want to bring it out on this particular forum, but you know what I'm talking about the depths that our enemy would go to keep us a mental slave. For a reason. They brought us here to the North American shores to put us to work and to work us to death. And when they saw that our mental power, our spiritual power, far exceeded their ability to contain us, they had to develop new ways to focus our power for their political and economic end. Is that a good enough answer without me becoming too radical or too politically incorrect, Sister Gidry?
Yes, sir. Brother Joe said, you never miss, so you really don't take my approval. And I wanted to get to that point, and I'm kind of trying to get to the meat of the topic, because here's the thing. This is what's happening. Between 1990 and 2012, the prescription drug use for psychotic medication for children under the age of 16 has increased in the black community by 43%.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, Jason, you and I are very close in age, and I remember going to school, and I never heard of anything ADD, ADHD, Ritalin, Meloreal, Lithium, Valium given to any of my peers because there was a behavioral problem or because,
right.
You know, little Abdul couldn't sit still. And so he went to the doctor, and the doctor gave him a pill. However, what I have found is that as in the 1970s, when black people became more aware of their own power, and if anybody was blessed to grow up in the 70s like I was, hey, that was a decade better than any other decade I've ever even heard.
Yes,
black people became more empowered. There was love. There was unity. Even the music that came out of the 70s spoke to love and community, and we just flourished as a people. And what happened is that they began to see our power. And so as we started to educate our children and we started to stand on the shoulders of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the shoulders of the Black Panthers, we started to empower our children and give them an education that was not offered outside of our homes. And our children began to be smarter than what, you know, they had wanted us to be. All of a sudden, Brother Jason, in 1980, we started getting diagnosed with attention deficit disorder.
It's not
we had attention deficit disorder. It's just that we knew what you was teaching us was propaganda, so you couldn't hold our attention. That's what was happening. So now, what does all this lead to? You know, little Abdul can't sit still. You know, sister is all over the place. She can't focus on this, that, and the other. So they take her to a doctor, and the American Medical Society made a decision with the FDA, which is the Federal Drug Administration, that children could actually cope in a school environment while taking antipsychotic medication. Now, I'm not functioning in school, but now you're going to give me a sedative to calm me down. I'm not alert, so I'm not able to pick up on this substandard education that you've given me already.
Go ahead, sister.
And what has happened? What's been the result? We got children graduating from high school at the age of 18, some 19, some 20, but none of them can read past the fifth grade level. We have superstars that have gone on to make big money because of their athletic ability. But when their physical persons fail, when they break that leg or, you know, get paralyzed or whatever, they have nothing to fall back on, but they have a degree. from Grambling State University or from LSU or some of our other historical black universities, but they can't read. And so what I'm telling people is that this is by design, and that's why I say this is the road to the re-enslavement of the black man, because once you start putting those antipsychotic drugs in your child because somebody said your child was hyper or somebody said, you know, he had a problem focusing and he's coming home with D's and F's, but he can hold an intelligent conversation at home with you, then we need to step up and say, hey, no, this is not what's going on with my child. Your inability to apply the knowledge to educate him may be going on with my child. Or maybe that side deal that you cut with the FDA to get as many children on antipsychotic drugs is what's wrong with my child. But I want people to understand, because this is what happens when they start to have behavior problems in school. You know, back in our day, you know, we could get paddled. We can, you know, our parents would come to the school and put us in check. But now, this is what happens, Brother Jason. We'll start off with in-school suspension, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And now we move on to where we get tickets. We get tickets for bad behavior. So
yes,
what
ma'am.
Tickets develop a criminal record. So by the time that child is 16 years old, his criminal record has already been established.
Yes, ma'am.
He might not can get into some institutions of higher learning because he had a series of tickets for bad behavior, negative behavior in school. And so where does that leave that young black man who is already suffering from having a substance education? He's not able to get a higher education of learning. Brother Jason, where does that leave him?
Go ahead, sister. It's one place, one of two places he's going to go after that, or one of three we know and we can identify that they have been sending us to right from that position, Sister Gizzy, and we know what they are: military, industrial complex, the prison industrial complex, or the grave.
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. You've spelled it out. The conspiracy is there. You know, many people try to and fail to discount the teachings of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I wish our listeners, those of us who have not yet picked up the book, Message to the Black Man by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, there's a section in that book where he speaks on Yaqub. And I would many of the things that I'm going to mention, I'm only mentioning them briefly so we could, in the course of our study, in the course of our day, we could pick these things up and read them for ourselves. But one of the things that we did learn in the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad with respect to this fella, Yaqub, was the fact that he did not act alone. He had help. He had those in society who were given high honors. We know that there was a conspiracy afoot with doctors, with morticians, and the doctors and the doctor class was able to lie and be able to tell simple lies that was able in the end to change the way society looked. And I'm going to leave it like that. But the fact of the matter is, Sister Gizzy, you mentioned the FDA and the medical establishment. And I would just like to ask our audience to use common sense in just this aspect. Why is it that we hear on the news from time to time that many medications that we thought were approved by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, have been recalled? And when we hear of the recall, it's almost as though the pharmaceutical company is stranded all alone on an island without the FDA there to back them up like they were originally. So we hear Novartis has recalled drug YZH. Drug YZH was already approved by the FDA. But now when we hear about drug YZH being recalled and several lawsuits stemming from death and maimings and people going crazy and losing their mind and dying on the same drug that the FDA approved, the FDA is east and Novartis is west. And Novartis is left to stand there paying out in sometime these class action suits and millions of dollars, while the FDA seems to stand there with no blood on his hands. We got the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. We know for a fact that they have been in some states taking payoffs from these large pharmaceutical companies to allow these drugs. In many instances, they were saying that they were drugs that were related to cancer and drugs that were related to AIDS for them to get on what's known as a fast track. And if you had a certain amount of money, your drug would not be studied. It would be fast track. That means it would be sent out into the market. And Sister Gizzy, here's the trick. These drugs have to go through a doctor, and the doctor has to prescribe them. Why are they on TV being advertised? Why do we see a television program being sponsored by a drug that you and I can only get if it comes from a doctor's prescription? It's for us to go to our doctor with these symptoms that they tell us that we have on TV. Oh, are you feeling a little anxious? They have a cartoon right now on TV, Sister Gizzy, with it looked like a black cloud over a woman's head, and the black cloud turns into an umbrella. The black cloud turns into a hole. The black cloud turns into a robe that goes around the woman, and it seems like it weighs the woman down. They're advertising the antipsychotic drug, but they want you and I, who have little feelings of depression. Oh, what's the matter with you, brother? Oh, my aunt just died. I'm feeling a little sad. She was one of my favorite aunties. Well, you need to go get this drug. So I go to my doctor now, and I'm asking my doctor, I'm saying, listen, I feel a little upset that my auntie just died. He said, well, I know of a drug. Oh, I know of a drug, too. We both saw it on TV. But here's the kicker. The reason why it's on television, brothers and sisters, is so that and they pay good money for the advertising. It's so the television station, who is making great deals of money off the advertisement, because these are not no 15-second commercials. These commercials are sometimes 30 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minute long commercials. They're paying good money in advertising for these products. So the news arm of that same television station does not take up any arms and investigate the same drugs. Why? Because they're paying their salary. So the news, the 2020, can't go and do a deep investigation on this new drug because that new drug is sponsoring 2020.
Yep. Exactly. And Brother Jason, we're going to talk about the drugs and the side effects, but I think we have my beloved CEO, my twin brother, on the phone, and I think he has a question or a comment. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Rakim.
Oh, Brother Rakim.
Brother Rakim? Now, he just texted me and told me he had a question. Brother Rakim? Okay, well,
yes.
maybe.
Oh, it sounds like he's there now. Brother Soul.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can hear you now.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
I just wanted to tell you all, you're doing a wonderful job educating our
all
people.
Praises due to Allah.
I mean, I cannot thank Allah enough for you all. Because one thing our people do not understand is when they go to these doctors, and like Brother Jason was talking about, the commercials that they put on television, this is a system designed to kill our people. It's a conspiracy.
Yes.
Brother Rakim?
Noise. Yes, ma'am, I'm here. But what I was saying, it's a conspiracy to kill our people. And you got to, when your grandmother gets sick or when you get sick, you go to a room, you see sometimes 20 prescriptions in one little area.
Yes, sir.
You don't need all these prescriptions. This system is designed to kill us, and they want to use drugs to kill us. And what we don't realize is there's only one God, but when the enemy put all these prescriptions and all these chemicals in our face, they want us to worship other than that one God. These chemicals become God. That's what we depend on.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
No longer is God my God, but this Viagra is my God. I can't get up, so I got to get some Viagra. If I can't get no sleep, I got to take a sleeping pill. If I'm nervous, I feel like something ain't going right, I got to get me a cigarette, or I got to smoke me some weed, or I got to go to the doctor and get something in my system because I'm just not feeling right. But
yes, sir.
God is the answer to everything. He's the answer. And so for this program, Nation Building, we're educating our people, and I thank you all. That's all I wanted to say. I don't want to hold much of your time. And
Brother Rakim, you can speak as long as you want, beloved. You're right on it, big brother. Thank you so much. Go ahead and I know you're full, brother. I know it's some more you need to teach on this here subject.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I love listening because, Brother Jason, you and Brother you and Sister Gidget, you all are educating me. I'm never too old or never too wise. Or none of us are too wise that we can't learn anything from our brothers and sisters. We learn something every day.
Yes, sir. We're supposed to.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So thank you all for the information. I love the information. The information, it should help heal us.
Go ahead, Sister Gidget.
Okay. Listen, everybody, if you're not talking right now, please mute your phone because I'm hearing a lot of background noise. We also have a question from an audience listener. Cassandra Reed, are you there?
I am. How are you?
All right, this is my sister, my queen from Savannah, Georgia, Miss Cassie Reed, Cassandra Winning, Body Bye-Bye Reed. Yes, ma'am, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic, and I want to thank you guys so much. I'm learning so much tonight, and I'm just enjoying the broadcast. I only have one question. I've long been of the belief that the FDA is in cahoots, for lack of a better word, with the pharmaceutical company. They're supposed to be the pharmaceutical company watchdog. But my question is, who's watching the watchdog? Who polices
right.
the FDA?
Well, I'm going to give my short answer, and I'm going to let Brother Jason elaborate as well. Let me explain something to you. The same people that pulls the puppet strings on the president of the United States, because you know he's not really the president. He ain't really running. He's just a whipping post. And so when you start thinking about your international bankers and the people who actually have the money to actually corrupt an entire system, they're not being watched. They're only being watched to be successful in their destruction of a particular people. And we are historically entitled to so much, but it's a greed and a race game at the same time, because I don't like to subscribe to baby language, but let me just say that the people of the Caucasian persuasion believe in holding on to a legacy of riches. And if they have to destroy their own people or the darker people of the world to obtain those riches, that is what they do. And you also have to look at it, Cassandra, at who are these drugs being marketed to? People who are successful, people who are confident in their own skin, people who are confident in their own minds and their own abilities, don't need drugs to cope, but it's mostly poor whites and people of color. Now, they'll put a pretty white girl up there to sell you some Cymbalta so she can look glamorous while she's sleeping, and you get a mind that you want to sleep or rest like that, but they're marketing it to you. And so there's nobody outside of the international bankers who are really pulling the purse strings of America that's really watching the FDA. They're just making sure that the destruction takes place as they see fit and as they have planned 100 years in advance about destruction anyway. And I'm going to let Brother Jason come on and answer your question as well.
Well, Sister Gizzy, you're right on it. And thank you for the question there, Sister. It's the truth. You know, it's a shame that we learn about these things oftentimes too late. You know, when they had the Gulf spill in the area off of New Orleans, and they had the BP oil spill, it took a big event like that to learn that the Mineral Management Agency, the MMA, who was responsible for the contracts, responsible for looking at all of the paperwork and the data that was going into these deep water drilling expeditions. We found out through the spill in the Gulf that was one of the worst biological disasters to hit Mother Earth in the last 200-300 years. We learned that the Minerals Management Agency was corrupt. We found out they were corrupting the same people that Sister Gizzard was talking about, that they, for lack of a better term, were corrupting the Minerals Management Agency by use of drugs, loose women, alcohol, and blackmail. All of those, and excuse me, the last one was putting puppets in charge. We learned the Minerals Management Agency was corrupt, and they broke it apart. We learned in 2008, after the collapse of the financial industry, that the SEC, or the Securities and Exchange Commission, was corrupt. We learned about it after the disaster that almost put the entire world in a financial depression. We're still in it, but we learned that the Securities and Exchange Commission was corrupt. How were they corrupt? We found that they had a good old boy network. They were corrupted through drugs, loose women, alcohol, and blackmail. Okay, so now we're looking at the Food and Drug Administration. Anybody want to take a wild guess as to what's going on inside of there? It really doesn't take a rocket scientist, but there's going to be something really big that's going to alert the entire population here in North America that the same exact people have done the same exact thing. You are exactly what your record says you are. And there needs to be, in my opinion, sister, there needs to be like in the old days, and I know that this is really just movies that they're talking about, but there needs to be something in America like the Untouchables, a group of men and women who are, for lack of a better term, determined to put America right back on its right track, not afraid of what is going to happen to them and their families, because we're not talking about little schoolyard bluff and bullying tactics. These people that Sister Gidget was naming, these big bankers and their families, they will kill you, and they will kill your family, and they'll do it in a way that those of us who take a look at conspiracies, we're able to uncover it as a conspiracy right away, but it's designed to do that so we know that their hand is on it. So we look at these events where someone is killed in a way, and you say, well, who is that person? Oh, that person that just died, that person was in charge of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they died under mysterious circumstances. Okay. How mysterious were those circumstances? Well, they really weren't that mysterious. It's got the hand of these people all over it. Okay, that's designed that way for those of us who are watching. It's for a warning to us. You see how we killed them? We'll kill you too, and we'll kill your family. It's no joke. When you're living in that realm, the only one who can protect you is Almighty God. And that lends to a point that I've always made with respect to our brother, our leader, our apostle, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, sister, to be able to speak the way he speaks with no fear. You know that there's a mighty God backing him, because those leaders in Africa who decided just to wobble a little bit away from the international bankers, they were killed, they were displaced. Now, I'm not saying that they don't come after our beloved leader on a regular basis, but God is able. And that's what I'm saying, and that's what he's saying to us, that if we walk in his shoes, that if we walk in his steps, that God is able to protect us too. There's a bigger picture at play. And I do believe from my study that the mighty God wants us all to know that he's built up an enemy in our midst and in our lifetime that is so great that only he and he alone can take care of that enemy, but he wants to show us how we will be able to take care of that enemy too, sister. So I know it's a long, drawn-out answer, but who's watching the watcher? Only God is watching the watcher in a way that's going to be able to do something about it. Because in many ways and instances, when we uncover these conspiracies, they say like this, okay, you caught me, so what? What are you going to do about it? And we have to throw up our hands in most instances and say, okay, you've been exposed, and that's about as far as we're going to go.
Hey, we have another question out there. I can't tell you who it is because Sister Gidget, she just called him her friend. I don't know what that error code is. Sister Gidget, what's that young lady's error code?
No, but it's out of Savannah, Georgia.
Okay, 619, you got a question? 619. Yes, go ahead and talk, speaker.
This is 619.
Yes, go ahead and ask your question, please.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Michelle out of San Diego.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Michelle.
Yes, ma'am. I wanted to say something, then I'll get to my question. I had a grandson who visited me a couple of summers ago, and he was said with his medicine that you was talking about, he had that ADH, I call it the alphabet disease, so they say, right? And so when he got here, you know, I talked to his mom, I was going to take him off of it for a little while and see how he does, you know? So he was doing good up to a point, and then he got a little bit out of control, so she said, well, I want him back on it. So I put him back on it, right, because that's what his mother said. And the behavior did not change. It got worse. Matter of fact, the behavior was better with him being off of that, right? So I just wanted to bear witness to what Sister Gitch was saying about that medicine, Ritalin, whatever you call it, right? And also what I learned through the most Minister Farrakhan, put this on the Dianetic study, is that what I learned from them is that the reason they want to put the children on there and say that they have, you know, all them things wrong with them, like attention, deceptive, however you say that, their attention span is short and like that,
is because
they don't want them. I'm sorry, sir.
No, go ahead. And again, please, if you're not talking right now, please put your phones on mute. We're hearing your background noise. It's very disruptive. Please put your phone on mute. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead, Sister Michelle.
Yes, ma'am. So what I found out through my course of study with Dianetics and checking with some auditors and stuff was that it's natural. When you talk about the tone scale, is that it's natural for children to go up on the tone scale. But when they enter certain areas on the tone scale, they can become what they call disruptive, and they don't know how to deal with it. So that's when your ADH and your ADHD comes into effect, and they'll start labeling your children that. But if you just let them pass through certain emotions, rise above those emotions, the highest emotion is happy. And that kind of like happened to me after I lost my son. I was bouncing between the lowest of the tone scale, which is apathy, which is like the living dead, up to grief. And I would bounce it at such a pace, I would bounce up and grief would totally knock me back down just to turn around and bounce up again. So So I had a therapist. My therapist told me, well, maybe you want to try some medicine. And what I said was, what the heck would I want medicine for? Even if what it's going to do, put me to sleep and make me not think about it, well, what happens after the medicine and wore out? I'm right back thinking the way I was. And I was like, that's not no type of life, you know, to live. So I had to seek refuge in Allah. And thank God, you know, for Minister Farrakhan putting us on God next. Now I'm able to rise up on the tone scale. And it's like the brother said about maybe somebody losing their aunt. You have to go through all them emotions if you even want to get to happy. You got to be angry. You got to become, you know, vengeful. Vengeful, seeking revenge on someone, thinking about it, that's actually their emotion. And you have to work through that. And when you work through it, then you're at a better place. You're rising above emotions. So now here's my question. Brother Jason also spoke about the three different things. He said, join the military, go to prison, or the grave. So my question is that they don't want my son in the military, and he's already been to prison. So my question today is there someone out there that can help me with my son? Because he does have some issues, you know what I'm saying, from being, you know, just a black man in America, but also, you know, alcohol, a little drug, going to prison, and the loss of his son. So that's my question. Can anyone in the St. Louis area that might be in Nation Building reach out and help my son? Because there's only one thing left for him, and that is the grave. So that's my question. Thank you for listening.
Yes, ma'am. Sister Michelle, let me ask, is your son a registered Muslim?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I've been talking to him about the teaching, and he's never been to prison before, but he just did, I think, like 6 months in prison. And when I talked to him after he got out, he had a very different attitude before. Like, he's not buying the God as a man right now, but he's so open. But if someone, a righteous brother, would just get to him, because he doesn't listen to the woman. And, you know, that's part of being a man. Sometimes you don't listen to the woman. But if we go after our young people, you know, I said, if the brothers go after the brothers, the young men, and be a mentor for them, that could possibly, you know, change. You know what I'm saying? Because the medicine that he's been on through life, when he was a little boy and he used to take Ritalin, he used to tell me, Mama, Ritalin is a joke. Because all he does is slow me down. All he does is give me opportunity to perfect what I was going to do. And as soon as the medicine wore off, I'm fixing to go do it. I'm just going to do it a lot better.
You there, sister?
Yes, I'm there. I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you know like I know, the best medicine, what has been prescribed for us from God, is make all men and boys join the FOI. Now, we understand that that's the place that is designed by God to hold us from that position.
Yes,
we got to be found where we are. And that's the difficult story that many of us are. Many of us feel it in general that we're lost inside and outside of the nation. Many of us feel that there's more for us to do inside and outside of the nation. And your son is part of the nation. He's part of our greater nation. And just like you said, sister, if he's not going to feel the love from a mother such as yourself, he needs a man's eye or a man's strong voice to call him back home to accept himself.
Yes, sir.
It's a process. And one of the things that I do believe that is missing inside of that process when it comes to us brothers, us men, is to speak in terms of love. When we were out Saturday, when we were out again Monday, we spoke to our people in terms of love. Because I think that that is an ingredient in all of the medicine that the other side produces that is not there. It's profit that is involved in the medicine that of this world. Love is the main ingredient in the world that we're trying to produce. And if there's not a brother that you know of in your area that would hear your plea with respect to your son, because he may not turn around overnight, but I do know that these teachings were designed to catch us at the lowest point of our lives and hold us and gravitate us or pull us with gravitation back to our center, who is our own self. Our own self, as our lessons teach us, is a righteous Muslim. And I do believe that it is possible for any and all of us. And I'm not saying that just because I'm in the nation. I wanted to say this in the beginning, Sister Gidget, and please pardon me, Sister Michelle. I'm just going to digress a second. This,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Tonight's talk that we're having is not designed for any of us to go tomorrow and jump off all of our medication. I want us all to think about this and be wise. I'm not a doctor. I know a doctor. However, it is designed for us to think rationally about all the medications that we are on, all the medications that we are using, study, and then go back to our physicians, go back to our doctors, speak to them rationally, because Sister Michelle, the episode that you had where you immediately took the young man off of the medication designed for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, by taking him off immediately, it threw his system into shock. These medications, the way that they're designed, you have to be stepped down off of them. And in place of where the medication was, for example, you could work with a young brother who has been on Ritalin for a long time. And if you're working with his doctor and taking him down off the Ritalin step by step, you have to replace it with something. And in the case of some young men I've been talking to, what gets replaced with the medication is strong physical activity. You take them and find a martial arts class in your neighborhood, somebody that's not going to overcharge you and somebody that has love for these young men. You find a class for young warriors. You find a class. I always recommend martial arts because it's physical exertion, and by the time they come home from school, by the time they come home from martial arts class, these young brothers are tired. They really don't want to get back up and go to the streets. They want to really relax because they learned something, they got some spiritual energy from the martial arts class, and they're really in a position where stepping down off of that medication is a lot easier. But if you combine just yanking them off of that medication and they're watching television, which is designed to pique them in their sensory perceptive places that you and I really don't know about, it's really going to throw them backwards, which is exactly what happened with the young man you were talking about. So I wanted to say, work with your pharmacist if they have any love for you. If not, find a different pharmacist. Work with your doctor if they have any love for you. If not, find another physician. Find another doctor. And you know when somebody has some love for you. I'll give you an example how anybody in our audience can tell whether or not their doctor has any love for you. First of all, do they look at you? I'm not talking about with a scope in their hand. Do they look at you as a human being? Second of all, do they touch you? Not just with the prods and the prongs and with the rubber gloves on. Has your doctor ever put his or her hand on you in a way that was not strictly medically related? Have they touched your hand while they were talking to you and giving you some advice? You know whether or not your doctor has any semblance of love for you when they tell you something like this. It could be this or it could be that. Let me work with you. Let me do some research. And if I don't know, let me send you to somebody that I recommend for this same particular thing. But hold on, mother. Hold on, son. Hold on, Mr. or Mrs. We're gonna get through this together. And I'm not talking about on major life-threatening diseases like cancer or diabetes or something that is really. I'm talking about on the common cold. I'm talking about on things that you and I know that we're going to get rid of eventually. Your doctor will let you know. I'm concerned about you. And if they don't have that concern, if they're always looking in your charts and they won't look you in your eye, I would tell you start looking for another doctor.
Sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Jones.
All praises due to Allah. I'm sorry to be long-winded, Sister Gidget, but this, I'm very full tonight because I know what Sister Michelle is talking about. You're not going to lose your son by Allah's grace, Sister Michelle. I pray that there's some brothers that are in your area that are listening to our broadcast tonight, and if there is a martial arts class in your area, if you can find one that he would take to, it's good for his mind, it's good for his body, it's good for his spirit, and the FOI class in your neighborhood is great for his mind, great for his body, great for his spirit, and also great for his wallet, too.
Yes, sir. Unfortunately, I live in San Diego, and he lives in East St. Louis.
Well, we got to find a way for Captain to reach out to Captain where they will send someone to his residence in East St. Louis and knock on his door and say, I got a present from your mama. And that present is me coming pick you up on Sunday afternoon and take you out to Muhammad's mom.
Yes, sir.
And sometimes it takes more than once or twice to go after a potential believer. Sometimes you have to go out of your way and go 4 or 5 days. They say, I'm going to start hiding. In Harlem, they used to hide from us on Sunday when we were coming through to bring out believers to the mosque, brothers and sisters to the mosque. They didn't want to hear what we had to say. They would hide from us on our way to the mosque. Come on, brother, come on with me. You ain't got nothing to do. We play basketball later. Come on, come on. And they would, like, hide from us until eventually we could wear them down. If we have real serious love in our heart, we'll wear them down.
Love covers a multitude of sins.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. And thank you again, Sister Gidget, for this show. I'm totally enjoying it.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Sister, who is always such a strong supporter of everything we do. We love you, Sister Michelle, and thank you so
That's
much.
Right.
And
yeah,
I want to.
Thank you.
We like you so long. I wanted to touch on, and I wanted to inform, and I'm so serious, y'all. I mean, I know a lot of you all probably don't understand, but Brother Jason and Caesar could bear witness to the extensive research that I've done on this particular topic. And
well, yes,
what I learned about some of the drugs that are prescribed for children who have ADD and ADHD, ADD, which is attention deficit disorder, and ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. ADD is really some type of really a depression that is so intense that it takes a child's ability to focus away from them in the way that we think that they should be focusing. And hyperactivity means that, you know, they're just, you know, they got all this extra energy and they can't sit still and they can't focus. However, I remember Minister Farrakhan saying that we, as human beings, we can train fleas and dogs and lions, but we cannot train the human child. And for you to think that it is okay for someone to medicate your child because of a behavioral problem, it's never, not never okay. And I'm going to tell you why. Because once that chemical affects the dopamine in your brain, which is the chemical in your brain that soothes you, that comforts you, that brings you pleasure, once you lose the natural effect of the dopamine in your brain, you never, ever, ever, never get it back. And what happens is that when your child is on this medication for a long period of time, you've heard people say, well, I've become immune to it. I've used it so long, it's become a part of my biochemistry fiber. It becomes a part of me. I'm so doped up that, you know, you pull a tube of my blood 10 years from now and there's still going to be traces of it in there because I've become immune to it. It don't work anymore. That's because it has taken over the natural chemical in your brain that soothes you, that comforts you, that brings you peace. What happens after that is that you have the inability to correct yourself. And this is what I'm talking about. This is the road to the re-enslavement of the black man.
Yes, ma'am.
Because once you imprison the mind, then the body is going to follow. That's a given. So it is never okay for you to medicate your children for behavioral problems. What we need to do is find out how to communicate with that child, how to apply our knowledge to that child, to their understanding. Because if we keep medicating our children, we're going to get them to a point that we can't correct the problem, and they are going to end up in prison, and that is the plan. So, like Brother Jason said, I'm not a doctor, but I am a counselor. I have counseled people who have substance abuse problems along with doing marital counseling, and I'm telling you that you never, ever get your dopamine back once it has been compromised by a chemical that is used over a long period of time. And that's why crack addicts are the way that they are, because once you get that first high, that is what they're chasing. But what they don't realize is that they have killed it. It's not there anymore. And that's why they're so aggressive in chasing it, because it's not there anymore, and they're trying to get it, and they're trying to get it, and it's gone. And so this is what happens to our children when they take these drugs. And I'm going to tell you, because some of y'all might have some of these drugs in your house, Abilify, which is used for schizophrenia, so-called bipolar disorder. You have Adderall, which is a popular prescription drug, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity disorder. And then you have Ambien for sleep.
Damn, he came up out of there.
Okay. All right, y'all, put your phones on me, please. Okay. There's another one that is been widely used among children nowadays. It's called Bispar. Now, Bispar is like Xanax. And all of these things that these children are taking, and it is compromising their brains. It's compromising their ability to grow and to develop and to think positively. And what happens is that they become irrational. You can't reason with them. They become violent. They start getting in trouble. After a while, they have an extensive criminal record, so they can't go to school and they can't get a job. So they're out here selling crack or killing you or raping you or robbing you. This is the result, people. And we have to turn this around. We have to learn how to deal with our people, our circumstances, our environment, and make it conducive for people to live and for children to grow up. Because if we don't, every mother and every father who cares is going to be visiting their children in the penitentiary. Now, before we move on to the next subject, because we're going to talk about the penitentiary in a minute, Caesar, do we have any questions?
Yes. You got 832. 832, you can speak now.
Salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
This is Brother Rodney from Houston, Texas. I've been listening to this blog talk radio show, and I'm absolutely blown away at the quality and the quantity of good information that I am being just enlightened by, elucidated, enucleated. I can't even make up words for how I'm feeling right now.
but it really is, it really lifts my heart to hear the level of intelligent conversation. At the end of it all, I just really believe, whether we're looking at the pharmaceutical industrial complex, the military industrial complex, soon to talk about the prison industrial complex, that one day, very soon, and it has to be now, I believe, we're just going to have little side conversations, coffee and tea sets, bean pie sessions about separation.
Yes,
what will it take to, for at least 20 million of us to form a state or territory of our own? Now,
yes, sir.
To some that may seem completely pie in the sky or far-fetched, but let's be honest, how far-fetched is it for us to ever think that we're going to get freedom, justice, and equality if we haven't gotten it after 450 years?
Yes, sir.
And since these folks are experimenting in every way, shape, or form, and they're so diabolical that it really almost transcends color. So we know we're the first balls to get knocked in the hole, but hell, they don't mind scratching their own at the end of it all if it keeps a buck on the table for them. So in the end, you know, to avoid a race war, and in the end to avoid the divine destruction of America, for, you know, in the scripture, you know, it says in the Genesis 15 and 14 that, you know, that nation that they serve, I will judge. So we believe in knowing that we are the true children of Israel. We know that this nation is going to be judged. Who the heck wants to be in a room when daddy gets to swing in that belt?
Yeah, go ahead.
You want to get out that room. And who the heck wants to be in a room where these Caucasian people have armed themselves to the teeth at these gun shows? And yes, they think that some jackbooted people in Black Hawk helicopters are going to land and try to take away their guns and all that kind of stuff. But they also got those guns for our behind.
Yes, sir.
Because the Trayvon Martin case just, it gives you, it's almost like, it, you know, Allah give you these signs, and you got to be wise to read the signs. So in all we're saying, like, for instance, Gidget knows that here in Houston, we have the largest medical center literally in the world.
Yes,
and
sir.
Talking to the head of the Texas Medical Center, they have in their master plan the plan to expand the medical center by 10 million square feet. And and the head of the medical center told me to my face, and he said, we don't have a wellness center. What we have is we don't have preventive medicine. We give out drugs and we operate. This is what he told me. So it's all about the money.
Yes, sir.
And so I just think that for us, you know, particularly as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, so loving and personally, even in his rebuke of us, that was such a warm talk he gave us on Tuesday, you know, about how to even live.
Yes, sir.
You know, and notice what's interesting is that sometimes what we do is we give up the vanguard position that Allah himself has given us, meaning that the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are so revolutionary and evolutionary, and then sometimes we just get bored with it. We put it down and we start running after other idol gods, philosophies, teachers, you know, other things that tickle our ears, instead of taking up the words of the Messiah and delving deeper, deeper, deeper into them. I close with their point, because if you really look at the fall of the nation, and when we even look at, say, for instance, Dianetics, the whole black nation had an engram when the nation fell. None of Elijah Muhammad went away, and the Nation of Islam was the last man or the last organization standing. And even in college, man, we were sitting around in the dorm room in Hampton. I mean, we were self-medicating. Y'all know what I'm talking about. but we were reading the Muhammad Speaks.
Yes, sir.
Saying that when I get myself together, all the New Yorkers, the 5%ers, all of us were hanging out. He said, and when I get myself together, man, I'm going to join the nation. That's what
right.
we was all saying.
That's right.
The nation fell, and it was like a giant engram for the whole nation, man. And
yes,
so
sir.
We don't have no trust for no leader anymore. We don't want to give ourselves lock, stock, and barrel to no man again. We have been so messed up. We're like a woman or a man that had a bad love relationship, and we'll never love or trust again, like Dionne Warwick says. I'll never love again, whatever that song, you know.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead, bro.
So let me kind of wrap it up by simply saying that look around you and look at what happened, especially down here in the South. We got in Houston, so to get you can bear witness, in Houston we have what are called You Buy, We Fry. And they're run by mostly the Asians, the Vietnamese in particular. The Vietnamese came in at the end of the Vietnam War and the fall of the Nation of Islam. And what used to be in our city Fish Kings or Steak and Takes and other places have
right,
been replaced by these fish markets run by our Asian brothers and sisters. Okay?
Yeah.
Now look at what I'm saying about the teaching of Honorable Elijah Muhammad how to eat to live. And look at all these Caucasians talking about organic gardens and whole food this and whole food that. Everything that he taught us, white people are taking up, and they've monetized it and turned it
yes,
into
sir.
Money and a business for themselves.
Yes, sir.
So what I would say to us is that let us once again seize the hill and plant the flag of Islam, of freedom, justice, and equality high on the hill so our people can see it and rally to the flag. And one of those conversations that have to be had is like this. Okay, y'all, I'm going to march with y'all one more time. Oh, yeah, I'm going to be at this demonstration. I'm going to give a strong speech. The fruit, we're going to be out there with you. Oh, yeah, we're
yes,
going to go sit in the courtroom at this trial. Oh, yeah, we're going to be with you at this press conference. Yeah, we're going to go down there. We're going to have meetings with the mayor and the city council people and the congresswoman and the congressman and the police chief after a policeman brutalizes us for the 15th time this year. We're going to do all of that. But at the end of it all, we're going to have us a little conversation over some coffee and bean pie about what happens when, not if, this stuff don't work. Are we going to wait another generation? Are we willing to sacrifice another generation waiting on something that we haven't got for 450 years prior to this particular generation? And what's my context for saying this? I don't want y'all to guess. I just lost my mother on May the 4th.
Mm.
And at her funeral, as I stood up and I addressed the audience as one of the speakers, I didn't do the eulogy, but I, as one of the speakers, I stood all of my nieces, nephews, sons, and sons up, and I told them that you are the next generation, and my brother, my sister, and I are now considered the old guard.
Yes, sir.
I'm 55 years old, but I'm the old guard now.
Yes, sir.
And that means now that the calls I used to make to my mother and to my auntie to ask them, see, I can't ask them anymore except for to call them up in my spirit and in my head to hear their voices and their sage wisdom come to me again. But I cannot call them on the physical telephone like I used to. What's my point? My point is that, you know, Allah, in the alternation of the day and the night, there are signs in this for the wise men or for men.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And my mother passed from the scene. I get back here to Houston, and my son gives me, not a sonogram, ultrasound. It's an ultrasound from his wife, and she's pregnant. And it's a boy.
Come on.
Allah.
So as Allah closes one door, he opens up another. And so now that I'm going to be a biological grandfather, I'm already a grandfather by marriage, but a biological
yes,
grandfather, I'm saying to myself, man, I'll be damned if I'm going to bequeath to my grandson this same level of struggle that we're on right now.
Absolutely.
So,
right,
Allah, please spare all of our lives and please protect us from the accursed Satan. And let those who are on this Blog Talk Radio, the heart and soul of the Nation of Islam, those who might be rank and file, who may not necessarily have a big name, quote-unquote, in the nation or not known by everybody, but may Allah bless them and keep them and inspire them and help them to continue to do the great work that they're doing on this Blog Talk Radio and on the things they're doing on Facebook and Twitter and conference calls and helping one another and ministering on to one another. I pray, Allah, Master Farah Muhammad, in the name of your exalted Christ, you continue to bless them and keep them and make them know that you are God and you are God alone. And ultimately, we're not going to choose no another leader to try to take us back to Egypt. But we're going to cross that water, roll up our pants legs, cross that Jordan River, and we're going over in the promised land. Because guess what, Joshua and Caleb? We can take them. We can take them. That's what I wanted to say. I wanted to encourage you all and let you know that your brother's listening, and I love what I'm hearing. Thank you so much, Sister Gidget. Thank you so much, Brother Jason, and all of the party crew that's on this Blog Talk Radio. You got me fired up, man. I got to go somewhere and preach tomorrow. But I can't do this. My younger son graduates tomorrow. Kamal graduates tomorrow, Sister Gidget.
Congratulations to him.
Is going out the house. All praise to Allah.
Excellent.
Oh, man, already. Brother Robert, though, before you go, would you be so kind as to introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm Brother Robert. In Houston, Texas.
Brother Robert Muhammad, I am so honored to have you call in, sir, and I thank you for your service in the nation, and that is my minister, my brother, my friend. Thank you so much for taking the time out. I know you were busy. Please give the love to the family. Let them know I love them and I miss them, and if Allah say the same, inshallah, we'll be back in Houston in April. Can't wait to get back home.
Well, you just keep jumping off the top rope, Sister Gidget. You know what I'm saying? It's like that championship wrestling. You just keep jumping off the top rope. Hit the enemy with the folding chair, the table, whatever.
There you go.
You know, this is like the octagon. This is straight up street fight. You know, this ain't no Marcus or Queensberry rules. There's no standard.
Go ahead, brother.
You know, right now we're all taking a final exam and there ain't no makeup. So we gotta do what we gotta do. But I do thank you, sister, and I just wanna be a brother. I just wanna be a brother and I wanna be one of those who encourage, who takes time out to encourage each and every one of us and let you know that what you're doing is so important. And if nobody tells you, know for me and for my heart that you have really touched my heart and rattled my soul and encouraged me to keep on keeping on. And Brother Jason, you blowing my daggone mind, brother. I'm gonna have to look you up, soldier. You're doing it just to get you out. She was already deep. I knew she was already deep, so she scared me anyway. But with the words I'm hearing and the advice you're giving to believers, I don't, I'm just like saying, wow. What it reminds me of, and I'm so sorry, what it reminds me of is what the minister said to me one time. He said, brother, we got everything we need inside the nation.
Amen.
Everything. And what I'm hearing confirms his words come up in my head. When I'm listening to you all, I'm hearing our leader, teacher, and guide.
Yes, sir.
I'm hearing. And I want you to keep on pushing. Don't be discouraged. And remember that we're all chosen. You know, Allah didn't just choose Minister Farrakhan. He chose him because he is a star without equal. But guess what? You're a star, too.
Aww,
and in what you, Brother Jason, and everybody put together these kind of talk shows and the work that you're doing, forging a way for others, trust me, you're chosen too. And in your own right, you are a star without equal, and you have your own place in the galaxy that we can guide ourselves by looking at the constellation of the stars. We know what direction we're going in. Y'all keep on doing what you're doing. I'm going to get back to my company. I got my in-laws in town to come down for my son's graduation, but I did want to listen in for at least 45 minutes to an hour. I've been listening, and then you queued me up. 832, who the hell are you? I know that. Now you know. I love you. Thank you so much, and may Allah bless you. And let me know next time you're going to do and what the subject is, and I'd love to tune in and be a part of the conversation.
Thursday at 8 o'clock, Brother Minister.
Thursdays at 8? All right.
Thursday, yes, sir.
Just remind me, Sister Gidget, come on now. Remind me, all right?
Got you. I love you so much. And tell them all a congratulations.
Yeah, he's the last of the Muhammads. I don't know what I'm going to do now. I'm going to be an empty nester.
grandbaby. That's what you're going to be doing.
Hey, 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 we don't babysit, we parent. You know what I mean? My grandson is old enough to, for me to, I'm going to keep him, I'm going to spoil him, and then I'm going to send him back. What? He said,
yes.
I said, what's wrong? I said, what's wrong, son? He said, Daddy said, I can't have it. I said, come on, son, come on, I'll take you to the store. Let's go and get some. Then he's going to say, you're going to take him back. He said, Granddaddy gave me some. Dad, why are you doing that? I told him he couldn't have it. I said, that's the joy of having a grandson.
Okay, which one is it? Little Robert or Mikhail?
Mikhail and Kelly are expected.
Okay, that's a lot. All right.
See, this Blog Talk Radio got a home-like feeling to it, don't it? It's really a family.
Sir.
All right. So let me go, but I love you all, and again I just wanted to
love you too, big brother,
and let you know there's no big I's and little U's. We're all together in this thing, and what I can do tell you is I have been absolutely edified by what I heard tonight. May Allah bless you.
Also, you, sir, and your family as well, brother. Please send me greetings from here in New York. We love you, and we love the spirit that you came in to our little home tonight with, brother. I'll tell you one thing. I actually have tears in my eyes, and I don't cry. I don't. But just the words and what you were saying about your mom and the family there, I felt like I was sitting there with you, bro. All praise is due to Allah. I do have tears in my eyes.
But you know, I grew up. I grew up in New York, brother.
In New York, yes, sir, brother.
Yeah,
yes,
I grew
sir.
Up in New York, and you know that always is a part of who and what I am. As Eric B. and Rakim said, I a New York state of mind. You know,
that's right.
I'm always sometimes in that New York state of mind. But
that's
I just,
right.
I want to say, you know, that New York is the heart of the nation, brother. You know, and it really is. And what we have to do the best we can is we got to take every aspect of the teaching and stop making it cliches. I'm not saying that's what we're doing on this talk show, but you all are taking and putting flesh on the word, or making the word flesh. And I'm saying it to this extent. Sometimes I say, you know, Honorable Louis Farquhar say self-improvement is the basis of community development. Yeah, and what does that mean? And how do we implement it? And what do we do? You know, and I want us to be out of the box thinkers. I want us to be off the chain. I want us to be off the hook. I want us to be so outrageous for freedom, justice, and equality that you know they know that mighty God has visited. And the beautiful thing about it is, and I love talking to my Christian brothers and sisters when they said, you know, John 3:16, God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. I said, yeah, that's true, and I love that scripture, but this is one for you. It ain't in the Quran or the Bible. God loved the black man and woman so much he came himself. All
that's right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And keep on keeping on, and let's just keep up the good work. And again, once again, I greet you in the green words of peace and paradise. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Wow, that was a treat from Southwest Regional Robert Muhammad. I love him so much. He has been such a big brother to me and a friend and a minister. I don't know if I would be where I am right now if it was not for Brother Minister Robert. So thank you so much for calling in and sharing with us. Okay, I know we've taken up some time and we're winding down. Brother Caesar.
Yes, ma'am.
We have anybody else on the line with a question before we move on?
No, we don't. But I see one of my friends from Mississippi on the line. I'm not going to bust her out, but you don't have a question, sister, for the panel? You don't have a question? Because you're full of questions. I know you got a question. Let me open up her line and see if she has a question. Sister, are you there? 662.
Hello?
I guess she doesn't. Hey, let me see if anybody else has. Does anybody have a question out there? They know how to use their question. You can speak now. Okay. Let's get into a song right quick again. So, can I play a song, Sister Gidget?
Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I think this song right here basically sums up what that brother was just saying on the phone, man. That brother's very inspirational. Just to let you know, that guy, I like that guy. He has some stuff going on. Yeah. this is Praying for You. Check it out.
Father God, I'm praying to you for somebody who knows you, Lord, but just haven't been seeing you in the right view lately.
I'm praying for a friend, he and I are pretty close. And out of all my friends, but this one I'm concerned the most. He say he reading daily, but he ain't really learning. He been in church, but say that he ain't moved by any sermon. His face weak, he ain't prayed in a week. He wake up and just weep, with his face in a sink. Lord, you gotta help my man, I'm praying for him daily. He ain't sin, but it just seems as if he going crazy. He say he feeling trapped, can't even hit up the mall. Cause every lady's half-dressed, tempting him to lust and fall. He keep the TV off, videos just make him feel that he ain't really nothing without money, girls, and shiny wheels. The other day he told me that he felt less a man cause he ain't have a 5-year plan or a piece of land. And man, it's crazy cause his family thinks so much of him. Plus he got a godly wife who always show a love for him. But he's struggling, even though he talks to me, I tell him what to do, but he don't listen when he ought to be. I'm scared for him cause there's people that look up to him. He got some younger siblings who've been changed by what he's done for them. But is it done for him? Lord, don't let it be. If he don't want to talk to you, then Father, hear from me. Is it done for him? Lord, don't let it be. If he don't want to talk to you, then Father, hear from me. Is worsen since we was last conversing. I'm with him now, he ain't doing well, but this I'm certain. He say he's trying to trust you, doesn't want to disgust you, but he was in the midst of sinners and did not discuss you. And just today his anxiety's got the best of him. He knows Christ but for hours refused to rest in him. He's not the best of men, but Lord, I know he really loves you, and I can't understand why lately he's not thinking of you. People trust this dude, you can crush this dude. Father, he needs more of you, I pray you touch this dude. What can I say to him? I'm determined to pray for him. Father, empty and break him, I pray you'll just have your way with him, cause there's a change in him and the effects are strong. I pray you'll open up his heart before the next song. And when he gets home, I pray you'll open up the 66 book love letter you wrote and soak it up. Cause he ain't hearing you and he ain't feeling me, and God, I know it's killing you because it's killing me. And matter of fact, there's something else he's concealing. See, the person that I've been praying about is really me.
Sister Gidget, Brother Jason, you guys are doing a wonderful job. I just want to put that out there. I know you know that already, but you guys are excellent, man. I'm loving this show right here. I'm loving what you guys are doing with the nation building. I like it, man. I'm just going to tell you, hey, I'm 100% behind you guys.
Thank you so much, Brother Caesar. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Caesar.
Can you tell me how much time we have, and who baby is that?
Hold on for a second. I think I know. 11 minutes. We got 11 minutes right now.
Okay. All right. I don't think we have time to get into part two because we only have 11 minutes. And I wanted to kind of go into the only game left to play. And Brother Jason, would you enlighten us?
Well, I know that we were talking about the prison industrial complex at that point, Sister Gidget. And I know.
Yeah, and no. No, what I wanted to talk about, though, I wanted to talk about how we get to that point. I wanted to talk about substandard education in particularly because of what they fail to teach our children, and people would be amazed if they took the time to break tradition, so to speak, and actually go and visit a school in what I call an all-white neighborhood. And I'm not talking about the schools where your children are bused and you know, they're going to, you know, these, how can I put it, these prepared high schools that offer specific entities. Like my children went to a traditional black school, but it was the School of Communications. But I'm talking about way out in the suburbs where the entire community and the communities around that community is white, and actually go in and view some of their programs, view their books, view the materials that they have to work with in their science labs, in their computer labs, and then go back to the school that your child is attending. And this is what I'm talking about, Brother Jason, when we talk about substandard education. I wanted you to enlighten us on how substandard education, the removal of services, and when I say removal of services in the community, we're talking about brothers and sisters who have gotten these tickets in high school and they can't get financial aid to go to college. They can't get in work study programs because of a so-called criminal record. I want you to kind of combine that for us, Brother Jason, and tell us, where does it lead us spiritually, mentally, and eventually physically?
Yes, ma'am, Sister Gidget. You know, here in New York, there was back in the 20s, there was a place called the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. It was in around 14th Street, around Union Square in Manhattan. And it was a place that was a sweatshop. They had young women that were working, putting together these. They used to sew, like, the collars and the sleeves and the French cuffs on shirts. Unfortunately, the building caught on fire, and it was one of the major events that attracted most New Yorkers to see how child labor was a detractor from the city. Because during that event, the fire at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, they witnessed young women jumping from the upper floors onto the streets of Manhattan below. And these are young Caucasian women, which has always been a symbol throughout their sojourn here as the one to protect. So they watch young school-aged, nowadays, young women jump to their death under a fierce fire in a sweatshop. That began in New York earnest, part of the what they consider the union rights struggle. But it also put on Front Street the idea that children had to come out of the factories and go into school. Now, big business was making crazy, crazy money off of child labor because, for whatever reason, they wouldn't have to pay a child doing the same work as an adult as much as they would pay an adult. So big business made another conspiracy with the fathers of education at that time, the fathers, the cities of the fathers of New York City and the fathers of the cities throughout the country. Once they put these child labor laws into effect, big business said, well, if we can't have the children working in our factories, then the children will become part of our money-making scheme. So no matter what city we live in, I know we have those listening in New Orleans, and I want you to think about this when we're talking about these charter schools as I'm going to bring it up to modern day and time. But the idea was the children became the focus on how we're going to take public dollars and put them into private pockets. So from then on, the educational system worked hand in hand with the business community, and the focus went like this. It said, we are going to put children in children's minds, say in a 20 or 15 or 10-year cycle, because we're going to produce in those children what we're going to need in industry 10, 15 years later. So we have vocational schools that teach vocation of plumbing and how to put together a printed circuit board, how to do carpentry, how to sew, anything that later on would translate into what we consider a middle class or well-paying job. I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to break it down to modern day time. Once computers came into effect, once World War II came into effect, they didn't need to have as many people working in line in factories. The whole economic system changed. So we got all of these people working that used to work that don't have jobs. What do? We make them docile. We make, in effect, we find a way to make all of their plights, all of their maladies, everything that's wrong with them, we find a way to turn that into a business. Therefore, we have the military-industrial complex. Therefore, we have the prison industrial complex. Therefore, we have the pharmaceutical industrial complex. Big business found a way to turn our ills into their profits, Sister Gidget, and it worked through the school system. So when we hear that our educational system is not working, we have to ask ourselves, it's not working for whom? It's working exactly the way those who designed it meant for it to be. And that's the short answer, sister.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Jason. And I don't know about you, but Brother Jason, it looks like we might have to do a part two of this.
I think so, because we're probably halfway through all the information that I saw that you have had prepared for this. And I know there's a whole nother section that the audience would definitely love to hear.
Yes, sir, and I think we might have to come back and do that, but we'll see what the people say.
That's right.
If they tolerate us again. Okay, so Caesar, how much time we have?
You have 3 minutes, but you have a question by 843 just popped up. 843, you can ask your question now.
I think that's Sister Marilyn.
I'm sorry, I had her on mute. Sister Marilyn, go ahead and talk now, please. 843, are you there? Maybe she pushed it by mistake.
Okay, could you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes,
ma'am.
Okay. All right. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, queen.
I just, you know, I was sitting here and I was, you know, listening to the, you know, the whole show, and I'm just so blown away. And, you know, first I want to thank, you know, Sister Gidget once again, you know, for a fantastic job. I want to thank Brother Jason, always on point. And I also want to thank Brother Caesar for always taking the time, you know, to participate and help, you know, us, you know, with the Radio Blog Talk Show. And, you know, I am so glad that, you know, we have this because we have to always continue to educate our people because we just don't know and we just don't understand, you know, how important for us to really know exactly what time that we are in, especially when it comes down to our children. And I remember a young lady just reflecting back, you know, I think when you was talking about, putting our children on these medications to kind of like calm them down. And this sister, she was constantly, you know, because the school constantly was complaining about, you know, her son, you know, he was misbehaving and he couldn't keep still. And so, but it was the medication was, it was like a slow process. It was like a death. It was like a slow process. So her mom took her took, you know, her grandson off the medication, and she took her time to work with him. And as of today, you know, he's an honor student. You know, I mean, he don't have any problems anymore. And I think that as parents, you know, we, you know, sometimes we get so lazy, we don't want to take our time with our children. And so, you know, we take the advice from these Caucasians saying that this is what's best for us, and it's not best for us at all. So I think that, you know, hearing, you know, and just knowing, you know, that that's not good for our children, you know, that, I mean, this, you know, I mean, I'm just blown away. I'm just like, you know, so I don't even know what to say, because I've learned so much, you know, tonight just listening to, you know, the both of you. And so, you know, I just wanted to say that I, you know, I appreciate, you know, Sister Gidda and Brother Jason taking the time to educate us tonight. And
yes,
I just want to say thank you.
Thank
yes,
you,
ma'am.
Thank you, Queen. Thank you, Queen. That's my chief, co-founder of Nation Building.
Brother Jason.
Yes, sir.
Brother, you know I got to say something. Brother Jason, let me tell you something, brother. I got you on the team, brother. You can't go no damn where. You on the team for real.
All praises to Allah.
Listen, I know some listeners out there that they don't like what I'm about to say, but brother, you're gonna love it. We got your ass now, brother. You ain't going nowhere.
Yes, sir. Well, Rakim, I love you, brother. I love you, brother. Rakim. Thank you so much for. I always feel at home, whether it be online or on the radio. You always, the Nation Builders family, always makes me feel part of a loving family, and I thank you all so much for that. Just from the first time I ever logged on, and I was speaking with our beloved brother Forrest about the work that you are doing in helping to save the hearts of our nation, and it's a beautiful thing. And I thank you all, and thank you for your invitation and your love.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we thank you, brother, for being here. You've been very instrumental in keeping this nation building movement going. And we surely appreciate you. And every chance that you get, brother, we want you to be on the show. Every chance you get, I don't care what we talk about. We love listening to Brother Jason.
Praise the Lord. Thank you so much. And we thank Allah much for coming in the person of Master Farad Muhammad and raising the most honorable Elijah Muhammad and raising the honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad and raising us to the point where we could recognize and love one another as brothers and sisters. And I mean that from the bottom and the top of my heart and the middle, too. I mean, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. And DJ Caesar.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. We appreciate you too, brother. You're doing a wonderful job. We appreciate
That's right.
you. For the moment that you heard the call, you came on, you have not let us down, brother. You've been here for us, and we want you to know that we're here for you also. Sister Gidget.
Yes,
Gidget,
sir.
I can't thank Allah enough for you, sister. You've been doing your damn thing for real.
For real, for real.
You've been doing your damn thing. And Sister Marilyn, you've been doing your damn thing too. I just love my nation building family. I'm down with MVP.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I thank everybody who listened. I think we might be even off the air now, aren't we, Caesar?
Yes, ma'am. You've been out there.
Yeah,
oh, good.
Yeah, I know we've been off the air. We're just talking amongst each other, but since I do have all of y'all here at the same time, I want to tell y'all I love all of you. And even though this work sometimes gets intense, it gets hard. I know personally, Brother Jason and I, we've had a rough week, but
yes,
we were able to come together and make it happen out of love for our nation, out of love for our God, and especially for y'all. And Brother Rakim, I can't thank you enough for letting me share your vision and letting me be me and do me. And Sister Marilyn, you know that's my little heart right there. That's my sister. You know, she's to keep up all my secrets. So I love y'all. I love y'all so much.
Yeah.
Brother Jason,
I love
Brother Jason for always being there for me and making this easy for me. I love you so much. Thank you.
Listen, Sister Gidget, from the time you and Brother Rakim, you jacked me up on the phone one night, and you told me that I had to. After that, I just submitted. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
I threatened you about two or three times the other day. If you recall, I had to threaten you about two or three times, but yeah, we got you.
But Rakim, in my line, you had me hemmed up. I'm at my computer. I'm trying to do some work, and you had me hemmed up, Brother Rakim, on one end, Sister Gidget in the other, and I'm trying to wiggle up my way out of it. And sure enough,
you tried to get out of it, brother. You tried.
I submit.
Sister Gidget told me, and she texted me. She said, Brother Rakim, I know you're a gangster from the old school. Get that shotgun if you and we don't go to New York to get him. I'm just kidding, brother. She didn't say that, but you know, we appreciate you, brother. We appreciate
well,
you.
I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be with my family and to do some kind of work and some kind of good where I know that in the past that I have really been negligent and off of my job, and so far, so good. I've been working really hard in trying to work with our brothers here in New York out in the field again, and it's really good to see the effect that it has on a whole nother generation of our people. And I'm not such a young man anymore, so it's just good to see that the old school tactics really do work, Brother Rakim.
Brother Jason, what did you just say? You're not a what no more?
I said I'm not such a young man anymore, brother.
Brother, I still smell the Similac on your breath, brother.
Wow.
That's how to eat to live, but I didn't see nothing about Similac and How to Eat to Live book one or two, brother.
No, brother, that's mama's Similac I'm smelling.
That's more like mother's milk, brother.
That's what I'm
talking about. We let Brother DJ Caesar go, Brother DJ Caesar.
Yes,
man.
Get back to mama when we get off the phone,
brother.
Get back to mama.
Yes, sir. Thank you again,
I'm
Brother Caesar.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Jason. Hey, man, I really appreciate you guys. Everything was great. You guys had a lot of people involved tonight. I'm just letting you know that. Everything's working out, man.
That's my big cousin right there, y'all. That's my big cousin. That's my big cousin, the Farilla.
Yes, sir.
He's doing a wonderful work, brother, just like you, Rocky. It really must run in the family, brother.
It runs in the family. That's my big cousin. He, you know, everything he touches turns to gold. You know what I'm saying? I'm still trying to get mine out the 10 stage, you know. But,
Wow.
I'm working on it.
I really appreciate you. We don't take it for granted. I really appreciate all the work you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And for all, and accepting all 99 of my phone calls every day.
Wow.
All right, family, y'all have a good night. I got to get started on part two.
Oh,
yes, ma'am. Okay, family. Mel, I bless you all. I got to take a phone call right now from the brothers in New York. They're just calling me now. So may Allah bless each and every one of you, and inshallah, we'll speak soon.
Inshallah.
Alaykum.
All right.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam.